Welcome to the Elevated Visibility Podcast, the podcast for female founders who are looking for more than just easy marketing tips and feel-good strategy and craving deep connection. I'm your host, Nina Gibson, holistic SEO expert and visibility enthusiast who is hell-bent on giving women a voice and a platform to use it. In this space, we chat all things SEO and marketing for your brand and business, but we also peel back the layers and the bullshit and dive deep into what it means to feel visible as business owners, women, moms, and more. If you're ready for holistic marketing strategy mixed in with some soulful storytelling, this podcast is for you. Welcome. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Elevated Visibility Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Gibson. We are back with episode 20 of the podcast. I cannot believe it. If you had told me back in May when I launched that I would make it through season one, I kind of maybe would have laughed at you. But here we are, and I have been so excited with all of the things that have been happening with the podcast, the amazing guests that we've had, and I'm so, so grateful for you for listening, showing up week after week, and showing the podcast love. I appreciate all of you. So today we have an amazing guest who I've not only worked with professionally, but who's also a really good friend of mine, Ruthie Sterrett. I'm so excited to welcome her to the show today. Ruthie helps small business owners create marketing strategies and consistent content plans with the Consistency Corner Marketing Method to help make an impact and an income for businesses. She's like a hardcore retail veteran. This woman knows her stuff when it comes to the retail e-com space. She is a self-taught marketer and agency owner. Ruthie grew into entrepreneurship with experience in blogging, direct sales, and health and wellness coaching, all while balancing a corporate job in retail marketing and being a mom. As a Midwest native, now in Florida, she lives by the motto, work hard and be nice, and loves to cheer others on in their pursuit of big goals. Ruthie, welcome to the Elevated Visibility Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. So, Ruthie, you and I, let's chat.
I am so excited to be here. Nina and I have like these long Voxer conversations about all things marketing, and we're like, we need to do a podcast. This needs to be a conversation that other people can hear.
I know there have been so many, and we talk about so many good things. I feel like there needs to be a Voxer thread that's just like podcast ideas, like that you go back and forth with people, you know, that you are friends with, but also do business. And because so many good ideas come on Voxer, because it's just like free thinking, like free flowing thoughts. So I feel like stuff comes up. They're like, ooh, that's a really good topic. So
yeah. And I think that's one of the cool things about the fact that like you and I are friends and that we met inside a mastermind, but then we've also worked together, you know, professionally and collaboration wise. So it's cool because we are able to bounce ideas off of each other and we'll just be having like regular conversations like normal humans and be like, oh, this would be a great podcast topic.
Exactly. I love that. So what are we going to talk about? What do we want to start with? I think we were chatting about community, right?
Community, which, you know, you and I met inside of a mastermind, and it was one of those things that I know for me, that was the first time I had really invested in a community.
Same.
And I remember thinking like, oh, this is a lot of money. And I remember thinking that like, oh, I'm spending a lot of money on a coach. But then after the original first 6 months of the container of the mastermind, and now, you know, we've kind of moved into an alumni elevated mastermind. But after that initial first 6 months, I remember thinking, yeah, I invested in a coach, but what I really invested in is community. And that's what I don't want to give up. And it's so freaking powerful, but like you would never know it until you're in it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, I remember you and I Voxering when both of our first 6 months was up and we were like, we can't, like, what are you going to do? And I was like, what are you going to do? Like the community piece of it is so, so powerful. And I think now being in like the alumni, like the inner circle, like I just don't foresee myself letting go of it anytime soon, because just having people to share ideas with and who are also in the thick of it that you are friends with, but also have that business perspective, because like, you know, I can drone on about stuff to my husband and he listens, but it's not the same. It's not the same as people who are in it with you and who have, you know, similar goals and objectives, and you've shared all of these experiences with. So yeah, it's so, so powerful. And I felt the same because I was like, oh my gosh, like what am I actually doing? And I remember I'd followed Holly for a long time, like Beachbody days, like for a long time. And then I was like, should I do this? Should I do this? And then I did it. And I remember showing up on the first Wednesday night call. And I was like, oh yeah, I know that this is going to be epic. And it was. So it's just because there was such a vibe on that Zoom call. And I don't even remember who the speaker was, but I was like, oh, this is going to be really good.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I think about it as, when people will say like, oh, well, I think about college and I actually think about like Rush and being in the sorority. And I was not in a sorority, but I was in a co-op, which is very, very similar. It's basically like a sorority without national affiliation, but same thing. Okay. Like you pay, you have a house structure, you have all of this stuff. And people would say like, oh, well, I don't pay for my friends. Well, it's like, no, I paid for the structure. And I happened to make some really great friends because of the structure. And, you know, I think you and I even had the same conversation that it's similar in like, where you go to certain universities and it gets you connected to people in circles that maybe you wouldn't be connected to otherwise. And that's kind of how I feel about investing in a community, whether it's a mastermind or a networking group or whatever. It just puts you in the room with other people that can make such an impact on you.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that that's one of the things that is not really, it's like an unspoken thing, but I think it should be talked about more, is networking is like your number one before like anything else. I feel like that is your number one tool, like to get yourself, like propel your business forward. Because like, I've been in business since 2014. And until I like, you know, pivoted, my favorite word, pivot, until I pivoted my business 2 years ago, I never had to go and find work because it was all word of mouth and referral. And like, I don't think that that gets talked about enough, because people do business online, so they don't think it's as powerful. And we're not doing a lot of the traditional like networking events in person, but I can see the power of it, right? Across like social media and even LinkedIn, depending on your industry, like that word of mouth referral networking, like that is so powerful. And I feel like that what you just said kind of lends itself to that. Like, it's the same with the gym. Like you, right, you make epic like gym friends. You don't necessarily pay for that, but you're paying for the structure and the opportunity and all of these things. Like there's so many different elements to that. So yeah, I love that. So let me ask you then, thinking about like the mastermind and other groups that you might have been part of, what's your advice for people who might be hesitant to invest? You know, to be like, okay, I'm going to spend all this money. Maybe I'm newer to my business. Like, do I really need this? Like, what would you say to somebody who's kind of on the fence?
Yeah, I think being open to knowing the next right step and just feeling in your gut whether or not this investment, this group is the next right step. Do you feel aligned with the vibe of this coach? Because the thing is, if the coach or the leader, if you feel aligned with that person, the other people being attracted to that vibe are going to be your people. And like, that was the cool thing about when all of us first met at our first retreat, is it was like, after the first 15 minutes, it was like, I feel like I have known y'all my whole life and I've known you for 15 minutes, like in person, but you know, we've been on Zoom calls and whatever, but we were attracted to somebody who had a specific vibe. And so even though when you're like, oh my gosh, should I make this investment? Should I make my money back? Even if you don't make your money back immediately, because chances are if you're brand new, you won't. You're going to get farther faster through that investment. And now you're going to be connected to a support community that really does help you figure out like, oh, this is where I need to go. And this is the path that I need to take. And the other thing that I want to kind of caution is, and talking about content. So, you know, we're talking about word of mouth and referrals. And I see this a lot in the service-based industry where people are like, oh, I get so much of my business from word of mouth, so I don't have to invest in content. And I'm like, no, because so-and-so might tell you, like, let's say your neighbor says, oh, hey, I worked with this realtor who was really great. You should work with them. And then your coworker says, well, I worked with this realtor who was really great. So you're comparing the two realtors, and the one who has great content is the one that you're more likely to make a decision and convert and call them up and say, hey, I'm ready to sell my house, where you got a recommendation from, you know, two different people that you trust, but it's that content that continues to nurture the relationship and move somebody down the funnel.
That's a really, really good point. I think there is this like, and we talked about this, so let's talk about it, because I feel like there's a lot of controversy almost about like content creation and what it should look like and feel like and be like. And I think that people are so, desperate for authenticity that they're kind of throwing caution to the wind. And like, I'm definitely a person who has like weekly themes for my social media content. I don't necessarily batch out a month ahead of time. However, I said this to you on Voxer. Nobody is scaling to 500,000 or higher and not planning out content strategically ahead of time to some extent. And you certainly can't create like blog content, like podcasting, things like that. Like people are recording podcasts right now, myself included. Yours is going to air next month, but I'm recording some that aren't going to go live until next year. So like that right in of itself in my mind is content batching. But I see a lot of people who are really hating on the content batching. And I'm really, really interested in that. I'm like, maybe if you're an influencer and you're like doing beauty products and stuff, sure, I can see that. But you cannot possibly scale when every single day you're sitting there being like, oh shit, what am I going to post about today on social media? So I would love to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah. And I've talked to a couple people. There's a coach in particular that I have in mind that she's like, I don't batch my content. And I'm like, you're right. Maybe you don't write all of your captions a month at a time or even a week at a time. Maybe you sit down and you write your captions or you write your posts or you know, do your stories on the fly. But if you do a longer form content, like a podcast, and you have guests, you are at least planning that out. You have launches, you know, when you're opening doors for carts, you are planning that out. So no, it doesn't have to be 100% mapped out and done ahead of time, but you're right. There has to be some sort of framework because if you're just throwing spaghetti at the wall every single day, you're not going to move the needle because you don't have a strategy. And I don't remember who it was. It was somebody on Instagram. You know, I scroll a lot, so I read a lot of people's stuff, but somebody posted something about like a strategy is not set in stone. It's a needle that's always moving and you're always adjusting to meet that needle. But it's being aware of that and having the intention to say, what am I trying to create for my content? What are my business goals? What is the content that I need to move the needle forward? And having some sort of plan. I personally, like I love to plan 4 posts a week. So then if I come up with an idea that I want to throw up there, I have space to, but I've got something planned so that I can be consistent with my content. And it's same thing with email marketing. You know, I'm going to plan out 2 emails a month, but then I might throw in a bonus email because I have some resources I want to share or whatever, but at least I'm being consistent by having that initial plan.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that that's the perfect way to describe it because, and this is someplace that I really struggle with right now because I know I need to be better at like planning, at least like you just said, like I love the needle analogy because it's the perfect way to describe it. It doesn't have to be set in stone. And I think a lot of people think that, okay, I've batched it. Now it can never change. You know what I mean? Like, and it's fluid. It's going to be like maybe halfway through the month, you're like, oh my God, I have a really great idea for a mini offer. I'm going to launch it. I'm going to do it and see what happens, you know? And so, but I really kind of like push back on the coaches and things like that who are kind of like promoting that idea because I think it's misinterpreted. And I really feel like, yeah, you cannot scale without some sort of strategy in place. And
it's very different for a product-based business versus a service-based business.
Yes.
You know, and I think in the content creation space, we see so many tips and strategies for service-based businesses.
Mm-hmm.
The product-based business is kind of just sort of like, oh, well, am I supposed to follow this too? And there's certainly things that you can learn from service-based businesses, but it is different. There's more, you know, there's different strategies to implement and some of that like supply chain and launch dates and inventory levels and all of those things that impacts how and when you're going to use your content because you have certain goals you need to hit around turn and things like that.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good point. Let's talk about product-based businesses a little bit because I feel like you're right. So much of the advice is really centered toward other coaches and service providers and creatives, and the product-based businesses and makers kind of get left out. And I think too, like there's a seasonality component. Like you cannot, and we talked about this with Retailer Roundtable, you cannot go into Q4 without a plan. Your head will explode.
You will get absolutely like run over by a truck. And I can say as somebody who is self-taught in the marketing space for a product-based business, is when you look around at the advice out there, the books, the blogs, the podcasts, it can be really confusing because so much of the advice is centered around service-based businesses, personal brands, influencers, because that's what's on the rise. And then what ends up happening is I see product-based business owners look at their competition, but they look at their competition that is several years ahead and think like, oh, I can just copy them. Like, no, you can't, because you don't have the same brand equity that they have. Their clients and their audience is further down the funnel. So if you just try to copy paste what they're doing, it's not going to work for you because you're in a different season.
Exactly. And I think too, like, people forget when you're a product-based business, there's an order lead time. Like, you're ordering inventory for the, you know, one or two seasons ahead. Like, you have to think about, okay, what does this look like? Like, and so I think that for product-based businesses, having that strategy and that 90-day look ahead, even 120-day look ahead, is even more important. And I would probably say, and you can agree or disagree, like, okay, service providers, like coaches, kind of, you can fly by the seat of your pants. But if you're a product-based business, you're spending money on inventory and things like that. You need to have an overarching marketing plan with content, like, kind of nailed down. It can change, right? But you have to have that mapped out.
And your merchandising team, I'm speaking, you know, specifically to maybe larger organizations and teams, but your merchandising team and your marketing team, they better be best friends, because your marketing team cannot work in a silo if they don't know what the investment has been made in as far as volume drivers, you know, key products, things that are not turning. They have so many other things that they're looking at. So they've got to be in regular, constant communication with that merchandising team to know and build that strategy to move the needle on the right things.
I think that's a really good point. I definitely, like, in my experience with larger retailers, and I know for you too, merchandising and marketing are usually, like, at odds, because, like, in my experience, merchandising wants to do one thing and marketing's like, but we need to do this, like, for SEO or paid traffic or things like that. So, like, that right there is so important. And you can scale that back down. Even if you're only a one or, you know, two, three person team, you need to make sure that everybody is, like, aligned and understands, like, the merchandising needs to meet the marketing and the marketing needs to meet the merchandising. So I think that's a really, really good point.
And balancing that, like, user experience with the merchandising goals, the marketing goals, the KPIs. Like, yes, there's KPIs and there's certain things that you want to hit, but there's also user experience. And that, at the end of the day, is, like, you can't nail your user experience if, as a team, you're not aligned on who the user is. And that is something that, like, oh my gosh, we have talked about so much, because there are major organizations out there that they don't know who their customer is.
Nope, they have no idea. Or they're trying to be everybody's best friend. And anybody, regardless of what kind of business you're in, knows that you cannot be everything to everyone. You need to nail it down. And it's amazing how many product-based businesses have no clue, because they either don't know, they don't have the knowledge base and they're newer in their business or resources, or they just, like, they think that they can do it all. So what are some tips for speaking to your, and I'll throw some in too, but from perspective.
I mean, I can say, I totally get that the niche down is scary AF. Like, I, as a service provider, like, I'm in this position where, like, I personally am newer in my business. I don't actually have enough data to say, well, this is who my ideal client is. So I'm kind of still throwing spaghetti at the wall. And then you're scared. You're scared of, like, what if I pick this niche over here? I start talking to it and nobody listens and nobody resonates. And I, you know, quote unquote, pick the wrong niche. So, I mean, that's one thing that I think can definitely happen to people. The other thing I see is that people will choose an aspirational niche versus who their actual niche is. And that's interesting, because the world and our culture has shifted, you know, and I come from somebody who worked for Victoria's Secret for years. And it's so I'm, like, fascinated to watch their evolution. But to go from, like, the angels and the aspirational, you know, supermodel to, then we saw Aerie start to bring in real people and real bodies and photoshopped photos. And now Victoria's Secret is doing the same thing because they got left behind. Yep. But that's where they continue to try to serve an aspirational ideal client, when the market was shifting to, no, I want to see people like me. I don't want to see aspirational. I want to see real and I want to see authentic.
I love that. That's such a good example. And I feel like that's really important. I think sometimes too, like, we don't really know what we're doing in our business yet, especially in the beginning. And I can speak to this, like this, I went through so many transitions. And if you don't really know, if you don't have that nailed down yet, don't even go to the next step. Really figure out like, what is it that I'm actually going to offer? And that can change over time, right? But like, what lights me up? What am I actually going to be serving people with and like, and providing? And what is that transformation? And then you can kind of sort of figure out, okay, this is who I'm speaking to. I think for product-based businesses though, I don't want to say it's not as complicated, but there are a lot of resources that you can use, like centered on keyword research and seasonality and trends and things like that to understand what are people looking for around the products that I'm selling. And you can use that to inform, okay, this is that user base. And then you can take it to the next step. Where are they spending time? You know, like, is my audience on TikTok? Are they on Instagram? Maybe they're not on social media at all, which probably blows people's mind to think about, but there is still a significant audience, you know, segment that's not on social media, at least not regularly. So I think that's really important too, because I think everybody assumes everybody's on social media. And a lot of times I'm like, yeah, some of your audience might be on social media, but a lot of them are actually hanging out over here. You know,
yes.
They're still searching Google, or they're on Pinterest, or they're communicating in different ways. And I think that's really important to know and understand, because you can't niche down and serve people if you're not where they are.
Yeah. I mean, just from a high level overview, if your audience is 18 to 22, yeah, you better be on social a lot.
And TikTok,
And TikTok, right? Yeah. But if your audience is, and I actually did a research project for a client where their audience was 55 plus. And it was like, this customer is on social media, but it's not their primary source of information. It's not their, you know, source of discovery. It's more like they might check something. They might look at something. So for a brand like that, or if your ideal client is in that bucket, you know, paid ads are probably going to matter a whole lot more than organic social. And so then when you're thinking about where to allocate your bandwidth and your budget, it's got to be to where your audience actually is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think like, this is something you and I've talked about a lot, and I talk about a lot, is like, social media feels good. It's a dopamine hit. And there's, you know, there's a little ego tied to it. Like, this went viral, or I got a ton of likes. But you have to actually think about what is moving the needle for your business. And is the time that you're investing in that channel worth it? Like, do you even have an ROI from that channel? And like, I mean, this is like the kettle calling the kettle black here. Like, this is me, you know, like, so please, people listening, I do this all the time, but it's like, what is this actually doing? When you could look at your analytics and be like, oh, actually, you know what? I have the best ROI coming from Pinterest. I need to spend more time on there, even if it's not as fun. You know, and I think that's important too, to really like allow yourself to dig in when you do have enough data to do so and understand like what, you know, where are people actually coming from and actually taking the actions that I want them to.
Yeah. And the thing about content, and when you scroll social media, you see tips from social media managers, from people teaching you how to use social media. So then you get it in your head of like, that's the number one thing. That's the most important thing. And then like, you know, that's one of the things that as I've pivoted my business, that I'm like, no, I'm not a social media manager. I'm a content strategist, because I want to help you figure out how to leverage content in the right channel at the right time with the right message. If that's social media, okay, great. But that's not the only piece of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that. This whole conversation is so good. I feel like these are all of the things, like, we could do a whole series on like, insider view into Ruthie and Nina's Voxer. So to that, like at the content strategy piece, tell us a little bit about the things that you have for Q4, how you're serving clients, how people can work with you, all of that amazing stuff.
Yeah. So the Consistency Corner is a content strategy and marketing strategy agency where we support clients with done for you content and kind of marketing strategy. I'm actually at capacity right now, opening up more in Q1. But what I decided to do is a way to serve business owners who are maybe not ready to completely outsource to a done for you. You know, somebody who's like, they're under six figures, they're still wearing so many hats, but they're like, ah, I just need some help. And I'm offering quarterly content planning sessions. So what we do is we sit down together and create a framework for your content for an entire quarter. So then you know exactly what to do and sit down and actually create. And I customize it to your budget and bandwidth and business goals. Because so many times I see like these copy paste type formulas, but either they don't take into account all the containers that you should be looking at. They don't take into account your bandwidth. They don't take into account your launches. And then you end up not sticking with them consistently because they're not built for you. So these VIP sessions, I'm really excited about them. It's you and me for an hour. I deliver you a framework and a recipe to follow for the next 90 days. And then I've actually built in some new offers as you and I are recording this, kind of behind the scenes, some extra accountability with these sessions so that we can have monthly check-ins and I can support you with your batching and answering questions along the way so that you can get consistent. Because that's what I've learned, is that the consistency like is the secret sauce, and having somebody to help you a little bit along the way can make, I mean, it's like we talked about with community, can make all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I love that. So I'll definitely include that in the show notes, because that sounds amazing. Sounds like something I need. So yeah, like just sitting down and being like, okay, this is, you know, this is how I'm going to plan out the 90 days and have you like in their back pocket for check-ins and accountability. I love that. I think that's going to be really, really helpful.
Well, and like you said, you're like, it's something I need. Yeah. Cause coaches need coaches and marketers need marketers. Mm-hmm. Like 100%. I had a VIP session with my coach last week and it was like, the lights came on. There was so much clarity just from that one conversation. Yes. And that's why I love these VIP sessions, because you can be so much more efficient and creative with that brainstorming buddy to bounce things off than you are on your own sitting at your computer being like, what am I going to talk about? What am I going to do?
100%. Exactly. It's amazing how much you can do in an hour with somebody else when you have that, exactly, that sounding board and somebody to help like kind of drive it, right? And direct you and open up new ideas. So I love that. So awesome. Okay. I will include everything in the show notes. Ruthie, I feel like we could just talk for hours. We might have to do a part two. So thank you for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Elevated Visibility Podcast. If you loved it and you want to support the podcast, please share it with others, your family, friends, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. I would appreciate it so, so much. Catch all the latest from me. You can follow me on Instagram at ninagibson.co. Until next time.